Welcome, Telltellers, to your next episode. It's a no sleep, and today I'm going to finish an old one off. And that no sleep is The Other Side of the Grave by M59 Gar. I can't wait. Now, I'm not going to waste any time here and jump right into it. So buckle up, you lovely listeners, and get ready for something creepy. Part 2 of The Other Side of the Grave. Had the graveyard somehow rotted underneath? Had rainwater deposited all the bodies down in some sort of cave? I was alive, at least for the moment. But this was somehow worse than a box. At least, in the box I could shout and pray someone would hear me. If I was in a corpse-filled sinkhole, well, there was nothing to do but starve. A fate which would take years if new bodies were continually sliding down into my muddy prison every time it rained. God, what if I never died? What if enough water and human meat made it down here to keep me alive for decades? Could I really eat a corpse? Funny, I hadn't actually cried while in the box. In that box, everything was simple. Here, loneliness and starvation would turn me into a monster. I crawled around that sinkhole for hours, testing each side of the massive pit. The sides were solid dirt packed hard by the ancient geological process. There was a small span of time when I considered building some sort of scaffolding out of bones. There was certainly enough, and tons of clothes and hair to tie them off with. It was a grim thought, but seemingly the only way out. Until the door opened. There was no light. I only heard it. In that sinkhole, there were only two sounds. The water draining away into a narrow crack between two hard plates of rock, and me. After at least 2 days down there, I knew the moment the door opened. It was nothing but a soft sigh of smooth metal and warm air, but I began moving toward it immediately. There was also a fourth sound, something moving along the piles of bodies, sending bones scattering and heads rolling. It was swift and mostly silent. It dragged something back out. I chased after it and dove into the gap that hadn't been there before. I got inside before it closed. Metal. Warm metal. It was still pitch black, but I could feel smooth, warm metal under my hands. Maintenance shafts, I guess? But for what? Had some animal found a grate in the sewers and given me my escape? I felt behind me, but the door was solid metal. Not a grate. And covered with unfamiliar sleek patterns. Checking, I found that I could push it open if I wanted to. It opened only from the inside, and I had somehow missed it while feeling the side of the sinkhole. I could go back if I wanted to, but to hell with that. I turned and started crawling ahead. There was no way to tell how long the warm and smooth metal tunnel was. I'd been in darkness so long that I'd lost all sense of distance and time. I crawled until my hands and feet were too weak to move, and then I stumped along on my elbows and knees. This was going somewhere. This had to be going somewhere. I slept encased in warmth. When I put my head to the soft round hump of metal, I could hear a rising and falling humming, as if everything around me were alive, asleep, and breathing softly somewhere deep and distant. How long had I been underground by then? A week? For the first time in a week, I found light. When I awoke and kept crawling again on my sore hands, I finally emerged into an open chamber that held its own dim grey ambient glow. As happy as I was to finally see again, and even then, only the barest un-darkness that any normal human eye would have seen as pitch black, had they not spent a week underground craving light, I also knew I was not nearly home, nor safe. Here, the sleek metal tubes of the tunnel expanded to form a sort of rectangular mortuary. There was no door, only a maze of pipes overlapping one another. The pipes bulged upwards in places in a series of table-like formations. On these knotted biers rested six corpses in various stages of decay. Two of the tables were empty. Yeah, from bad to worse. But my time buried alive had beaten all the fear out of me. Death was no longer the worst possible outcome. I had to keep going. The chamber had multiple ways out, and none of them looked official. I crawled up into a pipeline's hole and hid there as I heard something sighing outside a larger gap. As I squeezed myself tighter and tighter into shadow, I watched an enormous organic metallic hand on 1,000 juxtaposed joints slide in without a sound and pick up the furthest corpse in the row. From the sound, I knew that this was what had entered my sinkhole. This was what had stolen a corpse. This had reached all the way down the interminable tunnel on its endless metal jointed arm. And now it was taking one of the bodies to another chamber. Creeping by sourceless, grey, barely light, I moved down the subtly pulsing tunnel beyond, following the arm as it receded into gloom. It was dangerous and my heart threatened to pound through my ribcage, but I had nowhere else to go. I only barely caught my breath as I came face to face with the human skull. I nearly screamed. I then set it into the wall. No, part of the wall. It gaped with open eyes at nothing. Tubes of a dozen different varieties, all smooth chrome, had entered it through the ears and mouth and spinal cord area. The ends of those connections gleamed as spikes and fluid carriers. Had they once connected to something? Moving on, I followed the curve of the wide metallic cave until I reached what looked like twin operating rooms. A steel bush of microarms hovered over a pipe bulge bier within each room, picking and clawing at the corpse on each table. No, not picking at. I crept closer. That had deposited the left body and then departed somewhere. The body on the left table was long decayed, but tiny claws and surgical instruments on arms between 6 and 10 feet long appeared to be dipping into a wide bath in the floor. It was filled with random pieces of human flesh, and then carefully applying those pieces to the skull of the dead patient. I slipped and tumbled into the room, nearly sliding into the vat of flesh, but gripped warm metal at the last second. Had I been caught? No. The surgical arms never even so much as slowed. They didn't care at all about me. I hugged the wall, knowing the same might not be true of that bigger arm. As I watched, the arms reconstructed the face of a human being. They did not rebuild his hair or skin, only the muscles around his skull. And then two eyes were plucked from the vat and inserted with great care. For the first time since I'd been buried alive, I felt vaguely not alone. Although the eyes just stared straight up. They had no eyelids and, as yet, no muscles to move them. What were these machines doing? The arms began filling the inner portions of the skull where I could not see. Then they flitted quickly down the table, piecing together a spine and the core of a nervous system. Between the ribs, the next thing they fused together were two different lung sacs from the vat. A small arc of electricity shocked the heart placed in between. The head, lungs, heart, and ribcage on the table began screaming. Loud echoes of terror radiated out from the organic metal surgery room. I froze in absolute terror for an eternal moment, and then jumped forward. I hissed, "Shut up! It will hear you!" The muscle-bound skull could not move, but the eye sitting within did. Ever so slowly, those irises focused on me. Its windpipe moved visibly between its skull and septum. Its lungs contracted with the effort. It then said something in Hindi. I put my finger to my lips. "Shh." The reanimated half-body said one more sentence in Hindi, then closed its jutting jaw to signal it would remain silent. Was it a man or a woman? What had it said? It watched me sidelong with terrified eyes as I climbed into the other operating room. The same thing was happening there. But the process was not as far along. The machines were pulling from a vat filled with bone fragments and rebuilding a spinal column below a cracked skull. I must have rocked back and forth for a solid minute, as the insanity of what I was seeing overwhelmed me. What the hell was this? I must have gone insane. I was still in that sinkhole. No. Whenever I turned and looked over my shoulder, I could see those horrified muscle-ringed eyes watching me, hoping I would do something. The surgical arms continued their work, adding more nerves and pieces of the circulatory system. The arms had seen fit to ignore me so far, but it was too dangerous to interfere with their work. To that man or woman on the table, I whispered, "I'll come back for you." I waited for a nod, listened to a third sentence in Hindi, then headed on. I repeated the foreign syllables in my mind, hoping to memorize them and translate them later if I ever saw civilization again. Who knew what terrible secrets that reanimated man or woman had seen? The curve continued, taking me through a cathedral-like area where pools of black water stank under a ribcage of thick metal bones, dripping ichor from an ancient tubing. The light here was still barely perceptible, and so thin that I had to move my head back and forth to make out shapes. But it was definitely shifting from grey to blue as I climbed across the vast valley. At no place and no junction were there ever signs, text or floors to stand on. Nothing about this place was for humans. I wasn't even sure I was on the bottom, per se, as there was no difference between the floor and the ceiling, or indeed even the walls. The whole place could have been upside down or at an angle for all I knew, or there was no intended orientation at all, and it had just all grown haphazardly. Because grown had to be the right word, the metal conduits were warm and alive, and I couldn't find a single seam or welding mark. Perhaps a cave system had already existed here, and a horrible seed of some sort had grown to fill it over centuries ago, or perhaps I was inside an enormous demon skull, even now as it slept inside the earth, and this was simply its body. The world was a farce, and this defied everything I'd ever known. Legs. The next vast chamber held hundreds of pairs of human legs jutting from the walls. Not for me. That chamber was not for me. Too much. The mind cannot face some things. I climbed upwards, ever upwards, deeper into blue light. At the apex, I found the most excruciating dark blue light, somehow sharp and dull at the same time. I found an oval room, hosting a dozen odd dark devices and a face set in the wall at the end. It was the face of a woman, and her eyes were closed. Tubes and conduits connecting to her bulging head, as I'd seen in that skull before. And my mind began to grasp something about the nature of this place. Aging, growth, change. I couldn't explain it in words, but the dark spirit behind those closed eyes. I knew that if she happened to wake and look my way, I would suffer a fate 10,000 times worse than death. The next tube-surrounded ramp upwards lay beyond her. Moving as slowly and as quietly as I could, I stepped from one round pipe to the next. My gaze jumping from my bare feet to her closed eyes twice a second, when I saw her twitch. It moved. Her lids opened slowly, and I saw her eyes move gently back and forth, sweeping the room. She did not see me. I was clinging to the wall below, staring directly up at her chin. Her mouth did not open, but I thought I heard a hum of suspicion. I counted out 2 hours after her lid had closed again before I crept along the base of the wall and up the ramp. Blue shifted to violet as I ascended. I kept going up and up and up, climbing pipes, avoiding dripping black rivulets, and always staying quiet. There was a sleeping awareness about this whole place. A towering, monstrous machination waiting for ages, running pieces of itself on automatic in the meantime, but ever wary of intruders. And I found it there, in the violet basilica. When the light became so painfully violet that I knew human eyes had never seen this place, I found a sleeping giant. It was mostly fetus, mostly brain. It was maybe 10 or 15 times as tall as me, and it was floating, suspended in dark ichor inside a glass tube that ran from a biomechanical base right to the ceiling, unfathomably high above. As I stared into utmost horror and tried to comprehend it, as I watched its brain stomach expand and contract slowly as it breathed from thick tubes, I saw that it was just one of dozens. Like massive pillars in double colonnades, It stood at the center of a gigantic cathedral built to worship and house horrific sleeping beings. I stood in the center, in a circle of pipes, and for the first time, I recognized the use of that space. If they had been awake, those 12 would have floated in their foul chambers and gazed down upon me in judgment. This was a court of some inhuman exotic law, and we had all been judged guilty. I ran. I no longer cared about being quiet. My bare feet hammered along those uneven round conduits until I was through the basilica and beyond into darkness, where I was sure light still glimmered. But past Violet, beyond what human eyes could see, I just kept climbing, hour after hour, sometimes up, sometimes down. And then I climbed up through a narrow tube barely big enough for me to squeeze through, and found myself back in the left operating chamber. Somehow, I'd gotten so turned around that I'd come full circle. That, and I was on the ceiling. Ports and biomechanical adaptations had been fitted to the ribcage on the operating table above, and skin had been grafted on and was being fused together by medical lasers. I could now see that this was a woman, and she was staring up at me both in confusion that I was on the ceiling, and in hope that I had returned. I'd been right about the lack of an orientation in this horrible place. Could it? Yes. I climbed up the wall and felt my sense of direction adapt as I went. The entire time, I could have been on the walls or ceiling without knowing it. I'd simply never tried to circle the chamber's sides rather than climb along the bottom as I understood it. The question it left me with is simply, where the hell was I? And there was no escape, except back to the sinkhole from whence I'd come. I sat for a time with that Hindi woman, but we didn't know each other's language, so all we could do was wait and pray. The larger claw soared by at regular intervals. I watched its arm twist and move as it worked farther on down the line, and I guessed that there were other operating rooms, and likely other graveyards being pilfered from below. This was death. This was the afterlife. For all intents and purposes, we put our dead in the ground and this place took them and rebuilt them for its own ends. There was nothing I could do. Although the table in the right chamber was rebuilding an entire skeleton, the Hindi woman near me only had her top half remade. Half biomechanical, half organic, she struggled as a large arm came to claim her. She screamed, but one of the surgical arms clamped and screwed a metal mask over her mouth, silencing her. I stood unmoving and clutching the walls, until the large arm deposited another pile of bones and left the surgical table to its work. The arm didn't care about me. Nothing here did. A week must have passed while I wandered those ghastly halls. There was nothing to learn, nothing to see, nothing to figure out. No tools, no exits. I was beginning to starve, but I refused to do it. I refused. Even though there were whole vats of flesh just waiting to be eaten, I couldn't. I wouldn't. The black ichor was water, stained water, darkened with something unidentifiable, but it kept me alive. Unable to bear the afterlife any longer, I eventually found a new oval room and gave myself up. Among the black devices was a woman's face, just like the other blue-lit control room, and I waited for her to open her eyes. When she did, I recognized them. I knew those eyes. She spoke. Her mouth was masked and unmoving, but her voice came from the wall somehow. The words began Hindi, but transformed into something unintelligible, as the connections around her head bulged forcefully. The claw was upon me in moments. Chill, solid fingers wrapped around me, and I recognized the feeling. This claw had taken me down from my box and placed me in the sinkhole. I was captured, and I expected to... What? Be torn apart? Killed? Become a cog integrated into the machine? Exactly as I had always feared, even before I'd been buried alive? The claw carried me at an unnerving speed through blue-grey and even yellow-lit biomechanical tunnels until darkness shrouded me and a rising sensation gripped my stomach. Finally, we hit something hard, and I was thrown free in a slurry of mud and water in the grip of a tremendous storm. She'd let me go. Somehow, that woman had used some shred of her human willpower to eject me from the afterlife. I couldn't save her, but she'd save me. At least, for the moment. I was free. The odyssey that had begun with my suicide attempt was over, and I was back in the world of the living. I survived the storm, and even tried to tell the authorities about what was waiting under the earth and stealing their dead. But they laughed me off. It was also then that I learnt a bit about Hindu customs, and that most Hindus are cremated. Did they suspect something? Did their ancestors somehow know what was under the world stealing their buried? The graveyard I'd been buried alive in was for a mix of various peoples and tribes. Those who couldn't afford cremation, and unclaimed foreigners. It was possible the storm had wiped the entire thing away, like I'd been told. But I suspected that the nightmare beneath had closed its sinkhole because my escape had compromised that particular location. While trying to understand what I experienced, I translated the Hindi woman's four sentences, and their meaning, to me, is worse than anything I witnessed. She'd said first, when she'd been just a muscle-bound skull and lungs. Thank you. After I begged her to remain quiet, she said, I'm just happy to be able to move again. When I told her I'd come back for her, she said, Don't interfere. I want this. And when I'd finally seen her as part of that nightmare, as a face set into the wall and gagged for eternity, speaking only through biomechanical means, she said, When we die, we stay where we lie. Our bones are dust, remains aware for all time. This place is trying to help us. They are trying to help us. Though they do not understand us. We know them. They're angels. But her words became some unknown language after that. I wrote down their phonic syllables, but they're meaningless as far as anyone, even experts, can tell. And I'm left with the horror of knowledge, the haunting paralysis, born of what I've seen and heard, from the mouth of someone who died and been rebuilt. When we die, we stay where we lie. Our bones, our dust, remain aware for all time. Suicide is now the last thing on my mind. We must survive for as long as we can, no matter the cost. Each and every single one of us. For death is not the end, no. Death is just the start, the beginning of a lonely agony that will never, ever end, no matter how badly you want it. I thought being trapped in a box for a few days was bad, but now I know that death is worse. Now I travel from graveyard to graveyard, looking, hoping, begging to find that underground nightmare once more. I beg to be part of the machine, a part of hell. I would make a deal with the devil, or worse, with those sleeping beings in the Violet Basilica, if only so that I may live and breathe in some form. For death is without hope and without peace. Death has no escape, no air holes, no cramped limbs, no shouting for rescue. Death is buried alive with nothing but your thoughts forever. And this concludes The Other Side of the Grave, Part 2. Well, I really enjoyed this No Sleep story by M59Gar. I enjoyed its creepy factor, the serious danger the protagonist felt during the journey into hell and then out of hell, and the robotic sci-fi twist during the story. This story raises some really interesting questions about life, death, and the perception of value in life. So it was good food for thought. Well, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you're new to my channel, welcome. And if any of you have stories of your own, don't hold back. Let me know. Send them via email to storiesfablesghostlytales@gmail.com. Feel free to say hi, make requests, or even just chat to me. And for any veterans out there on iTunes or any other platforms, a subscribe or review goes a huge way for not only the channel, but as always, the authors. And thank you so much for listening. And my awesome listeners, it is that time. This is the place where stories live, and you telltellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.